Welcome to SCOTUSCast, False Claims Act and Implied Certification Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On June 16, 2016, the Supreme Court decided Universal Health Services v. United States ex rel Escobar. This case involves the Federal False Claims Act, which allows a private party to bring a qui tam action alleging that the defendant defrauded the federal government. In a qui tam action, the government remains the actual plaintiff, but the private party, referred to as the relator, typically litigates the case for the government's benefit and receives a specified share of any recovery. Here, relators allege that their daughter, who died of a seizure in 2009, was treated by various unlicensed and unsupervised staff at Arbor Counseling Services, a facility owned by Universal Health Services, in violation of Massachusetts regulations. They argued that Arbor's alleged noncompliance with various supervision and licensing requirements rendered its reimbursement claims submitted to the state Medicaid agency actionably false under both the federal and Massachusetts False Claims Acts. The district court dismissed the complaint for failure to state a claim, holding that regulatory noncompliance alone was inadequate to render Arbor's reimbursement claims false. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the First Circuit, however, reversed that judgment and remanded the case. Compliance with the regulations at issue, the court concluded, was a condition of government reimbursement to Arbor. By submitting reimbursement claims, the court reasoned, Arbor implicitly certified compliance with that condition. Thus, by pleading regulatory noncompliance, relators adequately pleaded falsity. By a vote of 8-0, the Supreme Court vacated the judgment of the First Circuit and remanded the case for further proceedings. In an opinion delivered by Justice Thomas, a unanimous court agreed that the implied false certification theory can be a basis for liability under the False Claims Act when a defendant submitting a claim make specific representations about the goods or services provided, but fails to disclose noncompliance with material statutory, regulatory, or contractual requirements that make those representations misleading with respect to those goods or services. But liability under the False Claims Act for failing to disclose violations of legal requirements, the court explained, does not turn upon whether those requirements were expressly designated as conditions of payment. What matters is not the label the government attaches to a requirement, but whether the defendant knowingly violated a requirement that the defendant knows is material to the government's payment decision. To discuss the case, we have Richard A. Samp, who is chief counsel at Washington Legal Foundation. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Samp.
The U.S. Supreme Court's June 16, 2016 decision in a closely watched False Claims Act case, I refer to that as the FCA. The name of the case is Universal Health Services, Inc. versus United States ex rel Escobar. The decision had a little bit in it for everyone. It held, as had most of the federal appeals courts, that a contractor can be held liable under the FCA for making a fraudulent claim for payment from the federal government, even if the claim was never expressly made but was merely implied. On the other hand, Universal Health unanimously vacated a First Circuit ruling that had reinstated the plaintiff's claims, concluding that the First Circuit applied an insufficiently rigorous test for determining whether the defendant's allegedly false claims were, quote, material. So which side really won the case? If the correct answer to that question turns on whether the court's decision will make it more difficult for private relators to prevail in future FCA cases, then the decision was a win for FCA defendants. For example, the court unequivocally rejected assertions, frequently raised by FCA plaintiffs, that an FCA claim is proven any time a contractor submits a claim for payment of a contractual claim despite awareness that it has breached a significant provision of its contract. Now for a little background. The FCA is a Civil War era statute enacted to punish and prevent frauds against the United States. It imposes civil and criminal liability on any person who, inter alia, quote, knowingly presents or causes to be presented a false or fraudulent claim for payment or approval, end quote. although the statute does not explicitly state that a false or fraudulent claim must be material, federal appeals courts have universally accepted that the statute includes a materiality requirement. The FCA includes a unique key TAM provision that authorizes private persons, usually referred to as relators, to bring civil actions for FCA violations in the name of the government, and allows them to retain up to 30% of whatever amount of damages they recover on behalf of the federal government as a bounty. The number of FCA suits filed by self-proclaimed whistleblowers has exploded since 1986, when Congress amended the FCA to relax the rules governing who qualifies as a key TAM relator. In Universal Health, the relators allege that the defendant, Universal Health Services, or UHS, violated the FCA by presenting false or fraudulent claims for payment in connection with its operation of a mental health clinic in Massachusetts. They claim that UHS's operations failed to comply with a number of government regulations, particularly with respect to the credentials of employees providing mental health services. Although the invoice submitted by UHS to government officials for Medicaid reimbursement for its services did not explicitly state that it had performed the services in compliance with all applicable regulations, the relators argued, and the First Circuit agreed, that the submission of an invoice implied falsely that UHS had complied with the regulations at issue. Because one federal appeals court, the Seventh Circuit, had rejected this implied false certification theory of FCA liability, the Supreme Court granted review to resolve the conflict. The court's decision accepted the theory that a claim can, in certain circumstances, be deemed impliedly false or fraudulent, and thus actionable under the FCA, even though nothing expressly stated in the invoice is false, but with two important caveats explained later. The court reasoned that when an invoice includes representations that, while stating the truth so far as they go, omit critical qualifying information, submission of the invoice can constitute an actionable misrepresentation under the FCA. The omission can give rise to liability if the representations, while literally true, would cause a reader to reasonably infer that the writer is making additional claims that are, in fact, not truthful. And, bad news here for UHS, the court went on to hold that the relators had adequately alleged that materials submitted by UHS to government regulators in conjunction with the invoices caused regulators to reasonably, but inaccurately, conclude that UHS personnel were adequately trained and credentialed. In light of those allegations, the court concluded, UHS's omission of information about inadequate training and credentials could constitute a false or fraudulent claim. But, good news here for other FCA defendants, the court did not accept the relators and the United States' theory that all claims for payment implicitly represent that the billing party is legally entitled to payment. Instead, the court held that FCA relators may proceed under an implied certification theory when two conditions are satisfied. First, the allegedly false claim does not merely request payment, but also, quote, makes specific representations about the goods or services provided, end quote. And second, the defendant's failure to disclose noncompliance with material requirements make those representations, quote, misleading half-truths, end quote. Given that substantial numbers of pending FCA implied certification complaints don't include allegations including those two conditions, the court's lukewarm endorsement of that theory provides little solace for the private relator's bar. Worse still, from QI-TAM plaintiff's perspective, was the court's treatment of the materiality requirement. The court confirmed not only that materiality is a required element of all FCA claims, but also that the requirement is, quote, rigorous and, quote, demanding. And the court vacated the First Circuit's ruling because it concluded that the appeals court had applied an insufficiently demanding materiality requirement. UHS had pursued its no implied certification theory argument in part because, it asserted, materiality is too fact-intensive an issue to ever be resolved on a motion to dismiss or at summary judgment. The court stated that those fears were unfounded, noting that materiality claims are subject to the heightened pleading standards of Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 9B and must be supported by specific factual allegations. In particular, the court rejected a materiality standard adopted by several appeals courts, stating, quote, a misrepresentation cannot be deemed material merely because the government designates compliance with a particular statutory, regulatory, or contractual requirement as a condition of payment, end quote. Rather, the burden will be on the relator to demonstrate, presumably based on past government practices, that the government would not have paid the allegedly false claim had it known that the contractor did not comply with the requirement at issue. Pleading facts sufficient to meet that burden could prove difficult for plaintiffs, particularly given that many government contracting officers routinely approve payment of invoices even when made aware that the contractor may not have complied with every applicable regulation. Indeed, the universal health decision from the Supreme Court is likely to prove fatal to several notorious FCA claims now working their way through the courts. For example, the Fifth Circuit is currently reviewing a $663 million FCA judgment entered against a manufacturer of guardrail components used on highways. The district court determined that the manufacturer's allegedly false claim, whereby they said certification of compliance with certain federal regulatory requirements were certified, that claim was material, despite repeated statements by relevant federal officials after being fully briefed about alleged noncompliance with the regulations, that purchase of the guardrails were and continued to be eligible for federal government reimbursement. In other words, the government says, no problem, we think your claims that your work was just fine, but nonetheless, the plaintiffs based their claim on allegations that the allegedly false claims were material to government contractors. In light of universal health, the lower court's materiality ruling is untenable. In sum, although the Supreme Court's universal health decision leaves many important FCA questions unanswered and will undoubtedly provide fodder for court battles for years to come, it can fairly be classified as a defense victory, particularly in light of the court's explication of materiality. One can reasonably expect district courts to be more willing to dismiss insubstantial future FCA claims on the pleadings.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.